Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm delighted to say in the studio alongside me, Jim Colberg from London Magpie, Sean Wade from the Newcastle Supporters Trust, and Matt Ketchell from BBC at Match of the Day magazine. Great to have the three of you all in the studio. For the first time we've all been together, it's finally here, the Newcastle Fan Show. There is a lot to unpack in the next hour. Just want to say a little bit sorry for Jim there. You didn't really get to hear a local hero, but next week we'll substitute Matt because he's been here twice now, so he can not have the headphones.
You've got to leave it on for the drums at the end.
Yeah, the big crescendo, right? Next time we'll wait. But there is a lot to unpack this hour. Of course, the Premiership did kick off this weekend, a 1-0 defeat to Arsenal. But really, that's the least of the concern I find for the Newcastle fans at the minute. The game is not a massive worry in itself. Still 37 games to go. There is still so much to unpack with the drama on Tyneside. Obviously, Steve Bruce, Mike Ashley. We're going to get into all of this. And of course, Rafael Benitez's comments today. He'd done an article in The Athletic. He addressed a few issues that he said were pointed out in the matchday programme to Arsenal. There's already been a response from Newcastle managing director Lee Charnley. He spoke about a few of those things. Before we unpack that, let's actually just concentrate on the game itself. And obviously the boycott. We spoke a lot about that catch last week. Mm-hmm. Let's talk at the game first. How did you feel that Newcastle kicked off their Premiership season?
Very poor, to say the least. I think they were up against quite a poor Arsenal team. I think it was said that there was about 7 of their first team players that weren't actually selected. Our substitutions bench was a joke. The tactical decisions that Steve Bruce had took throughout the game were a joke. I think we played maybe 20 minutes of decent football all in all throughout the 90. It was very much a game that, really speaking, Newcastle should have took control of, being at home, first game of the season. The new signings that were brought in, they should have had a bigger impact. They did have some opportunities, sort of Shelby hitting the post, stuff like that. So you could say we did have a little bit of bad luck, because I do believe that each game does have a little bit of good luck, but at the same time, sort of Arsenal had their chances and fluffed a few as well. So it was kind of a game, the way it was running out, it was going to be first goals the winner, basically.
And that's what it turned out, yeah. It really was. It felt like to me, I'm not maybe sure from the Newcastle perspective, but obviously I am an Arsenal fan, I did watch the game of course, it felt like from both sides, they was a little bit wary of each other, a little bit cautionary, and it still felt like it didn't match the Premier League intensity. I still felt like it had a sort of an off-season game about it, a pre-season game. Was that fair to say, Matt?
Maybe, yeah. I went to the game, despite my train being cancelled on Friday night. Cheers, King's Cross, for closing. But I made it there. It was probably the greasiest pitch I've ever seen in my life. I couldn't believe the players were playing on it. It was really tricky conditions. And I thought Arsenal were there for the taking, you know. I thought we missed an opportunity. And the team that you put out, I know you're an Arsenal fan, Charlie, and the team that you put out was bizarre, but that was Emery saying he wasn't going to put anyone out on the pitch who wasn't 100% fit. So that was an opportunity for Steve Bruce to get a pretty amazing start. If we'd got a draw, if we'd got a win, then, you know, things would be looking a lot different. And I think I'm probably a bit more glass half full than Sean. I thought we were in the game until Shelby went off. When he went off, it broke down. And then when Willems came on, it really broke down. He came on and started playing in centre mid when he'd been asked to play in his more normal position, left wing back. Bruce didn't put Key on the bench and we lost Shelby and he brought off Longstaff. So we didn't have a DM on the bench. And the reason behind that was because I think Lascelles and Dummett were both carrying knocks. We said he had to have two central defenders on the bench. So not great. Willems came on. We were all over the place for 5-10 minutes. Then he eventually gets into left wing back and it's his fault for the goal. He's anticipating a pass coming across from Dummett and he's backing off it. Maitland-Niles, to be fair, steals in, puts a lovely ball into Aubameyang, shares out of position. Hit the last person you want on the ball in that final third, clean for on goal is Aubameyang. Great finish. That was the only sniff I thought Arsenal got. So we've gifted you the goal. And you know, it was a big missed opportunity, and now we're straight into a six-pointer with Norwich.
Oh, I don't know about six-pointer straight away. We will come on to that. We'll look at Norwich. But let's talk about Shelvey then and the impact he made, because I felt like, is it fair to say last year he sort of fell out of favour a little bit under Rafa towards the end of the season? Is he going to be a player that Steve Bruce is going to use? He's going to be a cog in that team? Because I thought on the day itself in the game, he was an important piece.
I think that's more likely under Steve Bruce, certainly, because there's been a lot of talk about he being very different as a manager, getting an arm around the players, being more personable. I think there was a lot of, when Rafa was concerned, there was a criticism of him that he was, you know, there's a lot of regimen. I do think that that was lost a little bit defensively, but with a player like Shelvey, you know, he can pick out a fantastic ball, you know, he can find a pass that no one else has seen. And I think that is a big weapon that Steve Bruce certainly will try and use going forward, definitely.
I've heard this from a few Newcastle players now. They speak about how Benitez was regimented, so much discipline. But it makes me think, how much discipline? He weren't getting him out of the barracks at 5 a.m. for a run. I mean, don't players need a bit of discipline? What extreme lengths did Benitez go to?
Shelvey's a complex character, isn't he? He's a sensitive soul.
Really?
Yeah, of course he's. He's notorious, you know, he's got the face on. And yet last season, he had an injury, a weird thigh injury. He kept having to go over to Barcelona for treatment on his thigh. And every time he spoke in the press, we're hearing about him having seen a sports psychologist and keeping a diary, the secret diary of John Joe Shelvey. I'd love to read
it. That would sell a million copies.
And when Bruce came, he did have a little bit of a new lease of life. And he actually commented in pre-season that Rafa didn't speak to you very much. And it looks like he's got the bit between his teeth, but then I'm worried his injury's back because he had to come off. And when he was on the pitch, he was really dangerous. And actually, a couple of us were at the Fulham game, the last game of the season. He was excellent, scored an unbelievable goal, seemed to have a point to prove. And if he can stay fit, it'll be a massive advantage to us.
Sean, would you agree with that, with the Shelvey comments?
Definitely. I think Shelvey's a good player. Really speaking, I don't think under Rafa he was able to achieve his full sort of strength and greatness. Hopefully under Bruce he will get that opportunity. But I think, really speaking, the last two seasons under Rafa, he was playing a complete different game where his managerial sort of tactics came into force, and you can see that from the results and the points that were had. It was neck and neck throughout both seasons. And he had to play that way, you know. He didn't have the talent available to do anything else, so a lot of our fans maybe were sort of a bit sort of annoyed that we're playing too defensively. But really speaking, when you looked at the squad that Rafa had and you looked across the bench and stuff, he didn't have a great deal of options to do other than the game he was playing, you know. So, and I mean, with what Rafa done, we beat Man City. You know, so not many teams done that, you know, and he played a really good tactical game. It's the verdict's out on how Steve Bruce is going to deal with things in a tactical area. And looking at the game against Arsenal, it was really disappointing. You know, it was kind of one of them where first game of the season, I think, you know, whether people were boycotting or not, we all want to see the team win, you know, regardless. But unfortunately, it was kind of a big anti-climax, in my sort of opinion. You know, it was kind of, they had the guns there, and really, Arsenal, the guns that were there, really were a second-rate team, you know, compared to their first team, and they looked very much like a squad that weren't used to playing with each other, and probably they're not, you know, all in all. So they were there for the taking, and Newcastle didn't sort of take advantage of that.
Well, you touched upon the boycott there, Sean. Let's talk about it now, because we have covered the game. I know we mentioned it on last week's pod, Matt, the boycott, will it or won't it? How many people will commit to it? It's no good doing it and then at 5-3 going and taking your seat. If you're going to do it, we have to see it through. You went to the game. What kind of boycott did you experience or notice, Matt?
Well, I've been doing me sums. And I've got,
remember, we've only got to 8 o'clock.
So, ticket sales. I've heard the ticket sales were around about 45,500. 3,000 of that was Arsenal. Well attended. You all had the kits on. You look lovely up in level 7. So there you've got 42,500 Newcastle fans, theoretically, in the stadium. I think about 2,000. The thing with the attendances is season ticket holders who don't attend, they are counted on the gate.
It's really misleading. Yeah. I don't know why they do that. We can't have a system where we don't know how many people in one day, can we?
The other thing is it not a matter of safety to know how many people are physically in the stadium? Fire safety. Let's get health and safety. That's another thing we can hit Ashley with. We'll hit him on health.
But now it's all electronic in any case, isn't it? You go in with your ticket or your season ticket. But you know your card.
I bet they know, actually.
They will know.
Well, I hope they know.
They have to.
So then you've got, I reckon, about 2,000 season ticket holders would have thought, oh, I'm going to support the boycott. I haven't made my mind up. I'm not going to go. There'll be a few people on holiday. A few people couldn't make the game. So let's say there was 2,000 of those people who were counted on the gate but physically weren't in the stadium. That is an attendance of about 40,000. Our average attendance last season was 51, 52. So the gate, theoretically, is down. You know, Newcastle fans, it was about 9,000, I think, didn't actually go in the stadium. The problem is, it doesn't look like that on TV. The stadium looked pretty full. The stadium looked full from where I was sitting. I was in the Millburn stand. Stadium looked pretty full. There was the back of the Leasers, a few empty sections, northeast corner, and then what was or is, I don't know if it still is, the unofficial singing section at the back of the Gallagher end. I heard there was some empty pockets there.
Free section, yeah.
But then walking to the game, it was an awful weather, and we got to the back of the Gallagher end, and the protest came up at about 1:15, and it didn't look good at all. There was maybe, you know, the police nearly outnumbered the protesters, and I felt really bad. There was, like I was saying, there was middle-aged women there and all the guys, and they're waving the flags, and it was just a bit anticlimactic, I thought. And they've walked up from Sports Direct on Northumberland Street in the city centre up to the stadium, and it was raining. No one wanted to be outside. I think a lot of people who would have taken part in the protest, had the weather been good, they were in the pub, or they've decided to go to the match in the end. So the protest, although I wish it would have been better attended, it didn't look great. And then getting into the stadium, the stadium looked full. So,
but we still have to remember, though, that there was over 11,000 people that refused to renew the season tickets.
So that's almost their own boycott. It's their own version. By not turning up at all, that's them taking a stand. We have to, maybe, I don't want to say give them a pass because of the weather and say, oh, look, they was in the pub. But if you're committed to something, rain, snow, sleet or shine, you're there to do the protest. And isn't it a little bit, how frustrating is it for fans of any team when there is supposedly a boycott? As soon as the team starts spending a little bit of money, fans are like, oh, right, we're all right now. When it's not just about transfers and money being spent, is it? There's so many more issues behind the scenes, isn't there, Jim?
Well, one thing that probably didn't come across on the match day is there was actually a dual campaign. So one was the boycott itself, boycott Arsenal, but there was also the Support Our Toon campaign, which was parallel to that, which encouraged people to go into local bars, restaurants, and support the businesses in the city. So, you know, a lot of the boycott is seen as negative in some quarters, but there's a positive aspect to it as well. You know, celebrating the city, the club being symbolic of the city as an institution, it should be anyway, and that's part of it as well. So that's the other side you don't see. If somebody, maybe some people who were in the pubs were actively being part of that. Mm. Obviously, the weather was
They're
atrocious.
They're not part of Matt's total.
No.
It's a great point you make, though, Jim, because Newcastle, what it does for the economy is really important. The amount of people it brings, 3,000 people up from Arsenal to the city's centre. Probably spending the weekend, spending money the night before.
I know many friends stayed the Saturday night because we're not going to come up on the Sunday. Yeah.
Some are probably still there. It's really the Quayside is unbelievable. Yeah.
that's a show for another night.
But it actually, this is what Mike actually doesn't realise. He needs to cultivate the club because it's important to the culture of the city, and it's important to the economy of the city. Jobs, money breathing into the city. So it's really great to hear that Support Our Toon went ahead, and I believe they were even offering discounted drinks. So the Arsenal fans must have thought it was, you know,
it was onto something.
No wonder they were supporting it. Yeah. They seemed very keen.
They must have had a great weekend.
Well, there was meant to be almost at the start a joint boycott in Arsenal doing their own movement, We Care, the U, and Newcastle. Obviously, we know the protests they're going on. There was meant to be supposedly something that reached out on Twitter, coming together of the clubs, because they're both at the minute quite disappointed with the way. But safe to say, I'm an Arsenal fan myself. I think transfers, signings, boycotts can sort of maybe fall on the wayside a little bit.
What have you got to be boycotting about, Arsenal fans? Come on.
Well, again, like we did speak on the Newcastle fan show, it's not just about transfers, is it? I think a lot of fans, like yourselves, you know, we have Stan and Josh Kroenke running the club. Mm. We feel a little bit disenfranchised with how the club's being run, alienated from the club itself. They're never there. And it's an ownership thing. And the fans are being priced out, the typical punter. It's not about transfers. Of course it is. And I think everyone's own struggles in a club is relative to them. Yes, we're not a Bolton Wanderers. We're not a Bury. The trouble they're in, I can't even begin to talk about it, let alone imagine being a supporter. But that's the same for Newcastle. We're two Premier League teams.
Yeah.
The struggle is relative to your own bubble, I guess, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, what a politically way to end that question. We're going to move on because next we are talking to Harry DeCosimo, Newcastle journalist, to see if he agrees with us in the studio.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined in the studio by Jim Colberg from London Magpies, Sean Wade from the Newcastle Supporters Trust, and Matt Ketchell from Match of the Day magazine. Now, we're also delighted to say we have Harry DeCosimo on the line, Newcastle fan and journalist. Harry, thank you for joining us. Lots to be covering, of course, but let's start with the game then against Arsenal on the weekend, a 1-0 defeat, but Newcastle didn't disgrace themselves, that's for sure. What were your thoughts?
First half, they didn't disgrace themselves at all. I thought it was, Joe Linton looked good and Almiron looked good. They looked set up well. There was a lot of positives, but second half, after, towards the end of the game, after the goal, it sort of went up in flames a little bit, tactically. Steve Bruce said after the game that Newcastle gave it a go at the last 15 minutes. I'm not quite sure that's true. There wasn't much in midfield. The substitutions didn't make much sense. And, they paid the price for not putting Keith and Young on the bench as well and lacking options in midfield. And the situation with Jethro Willems has been quite covered as well. When he came on, didn't really know what his position was, and that was a theme I felt as the game went on, and that's quite worrying because a lot of Newcastle fans, the biggest thing of losing Rafa Benitez was losing that tactical edge on the sidelines, and Steve Bruce certainly didn't show it in the second half on Sunday.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. All in all, what. Moving slightly away from the game, what's your thoughts on the press that's came out? Obviously, the exclusive with Mike Ashley. Also, Rafa Benitez coming out in the press and giving his side of the story. And obviously, he said that in respect of what Lee Charnley said on Sunday in the programme and within the newspapers there. What you being a journalist, what's your thoughts on what's happened in the press over the past couple of days?
I think it's difficult to sort of take the Mike Ashley thing. My instant feeling on that was that it felt a lot like that interview we did at the start of the season a couple of years ago. He kept talking about competing with Manchester City and things like that, not really answering the questions that Newcastle fans were putting to him. And I think that's the thing. A lot of what he says, you wouldn't necessarily say that he's not using facts in what he says, but he's just answering the wrong questions and focusing on the wrong things and twisting things to sort of make himself sound truthful. Rafa Benitez is well within his rights to come out and say what he said in response to Lee Charnley. I wasn't quite sure what Lee Charnley thought he was, what the benefit of Lee Charnley coming out and saying what he did in the programme was. So, I think it's very interesting to see what's gone on. But, I don't think it changes any, what Mike Ashley said will change any minds on him, or what Lee Charnley said will change any minds on him either. I think the situation's kind of set in stone that everybody knows what's going on in the summer and it isn't good.
Harry, it's Ketchy. I wanted to ask you, say we've got a massive game, I think, this weekend against Norwich. Say we lose that game, how long do you think, and what do you think the situation would be with Bruce in terms of pressure, and how much longer he might get to try and get some wins?
Well, I don't think you can say that. In terms of pressure from the board and pressure from the fans, they're two very different things. I think if the same sort of thing happens, with the tactical issues that happened in the second half against Arsenal, and Newcastle don't look like competing against Norwich, then there'll be a lot of pressure on him going into the next game, because that's against Spurs, and then there's Watford at home after that. So this month's quite sort of like, you've got two very winnable games, I think, and two games that you can look at and think, well, if they don't win those games, then it's not the end of the world. But, I don't think he's going to be under a lot of pressure from the board, because he's kind of, their ideal man. They've picked him for the reasons they've picked him. And, I just think that it's that the divide's only going to get bigger rather than anything to do with Steve Bruce's future long term, to be honest.
And in between the Tottenham and Watford games, we've got Leicester now in the Cup. I said last week, I think his first team, the team that he puts out against Leicester, is the biggest moment in his managerial career. Do you have a hunch as to whether he'll put out a first team, or do you think he'll rest players?
That would be really interesting to see, because as you say, I completely agree with you, because basically it means that, you know, it's kind of calling Mike Ashley out on what he said in that interview I mentioned earlier about the cup policy and what goes on with that, because, you know, obviously everybody knows what's gone on before. You know, he said that there'll be a change. If he picks a strong team, then it backs up what Ashley's saying, but I'm not sure he's got the strength in depth to be able to do that. And if the result against Norwich is not good and the pressure's on, then, you know, he might not look at it and go, you know, play Gillette to play Almiron in case they get injured long term. Those same questions that face Rafa Benitez will inevitably face Steve Bruce. And you know, I don't think that the club was strengthened enough in the summer to back up the idea that they can challenge for the cups and be sure of avoiding relegation. I think Newcastle are pretty much squad strength-wise, pretty much on par. Maybe, you know, you could argue that certain players are better than players that have gone out or whatever, but squad strength-wise, I'd say overall is about par. So, to be honest, I'm not sure that he'll be able to go full strength, and that's quite a really disappointing thing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I linked to that, Harry. I was wondering, given Steve Bruce's position and the politics surrounding it all, what do you think would constitute success this season? Because I'm of the belief that, you know, should Steve Bruce do well, what's the next step after that? Does he push as Rafa does, or does he go back or revert to the policy that's famously been happening or infamously been happening over the last few years?
That's the million-dollar question, I guess. I think that success this season for the club is just sort of, you know, keeping everything, you know, getting everything calmed down again, staying up, and you know, if they can, pushing for a couple. As I said, I don't think that's actually likely to happen. If there is a successful season, then I think they, you know, they'll say that they'll have a gradual plan. But they keep saying, you know, 12 years of Mike Ashley, and he's constantly talking about 5-year plans, none of which have sort of come to fruition. So, I, to be honest, I don't really know what the long term plan under Mike Ashley is, because everything seems to be so. So focused on you know, other than selling the top players for big money, that's the only long term plan he seems to have. You know, you see the answer to the question about academy and sort of youth development and adding to the training ground and things like that. You know, it seems to be some very very vague, as though it'll be done in the future. But there's absolutely nothing really to grab onto that you can be sure of to say where Newcastle are really going beyond season, every season, you know what I mean? So it's difficult to really answer that question.
Harry, food for thought there. Thanks for giving us some time. We really appreciate you coming on. Harry DeCosmo there, Newcastle journalist. I want to ask you now, someone we haven't spoke to about, record signing Joe Linton. He did play on Sunday. What were your first impressions of him?
Yeah, I thought he looks a good player. He looks hungry. At the end of the day, you know, is he going to be a better player than what we had with Rondon or Perez? You know, it's the verdict's out. He's unproven in the Premier, so we don't know. It goes back to what Harry was just saying there. Why did we not take the offer up of buying Rondon and bringing Joe Linton, so that way we're strengthening the squad? Where the way that it is, you know, we could have kept Perez as well. We surely had enough money to be able to support them transfers and keep them players, really. I mean, 60 million for Rondon was nothing at all, you know, and I can understand why Rafa's took him to China.
Perez himself actually made some quite telling comments the other day about he would have stayed if Rafa would have stayed, and that showed more ambition. That was, you know, direct quotes, basically. Yeah. For me, it's a mix. It's about the system. You know, you've got a lot of variables at the minute. What system Steve Bruce is going to play? Are we going to get the supply line to him enough to be able to be worthy of that price tag? It's all up in the air at the minute, and I guess we'll see more so because he'll start against Norwich. Mm-hmm. But remains to be seen. You know, his pedigree. He seems a technically adept player, but it was a sort of game of two halves. To use an awful cliche, for him especially, you know, the first half he looked quite dangerous at times, but then second half, tactically, in terms of the system, maybe he was found wanting a bit after that.
Yeah, the Joe Linton, by the way, I'm calling him Joe Linton rather than Joel Linton. I'm going to see how that goes, but I'm going with Joe Linton because it makes him sound like he's from Wall's End. So with that, it's an interesting tell on the whole Ashley and Benitez relationship? Because as I understand it, he was identified last season and around about Christmas, January. They wanted to try and get him in January, but Hoffenheim wouldn't allow the deal to go through. It wasn't a Rafa player. It was, I think, Steve Nixon and the recruitment team. That's our head of recruitment, Steve Nixon. I think they identified the player. And it was said, well, we'll reconvene and try and do a deal in the summer. In the meantime, Rafa's kind of said, I don't think he's worth that money. So it's not really a Rafa player. So that's kind of probably...
But Rafa also said that he wanted to have his own contract in place before he was bringing in more players long term.
No, but that's, I know, but this, so, from what I've heard, that Rafa was kind of, you know, not, they were expecting Rafa to be blown away. Oh, great, you found me this player, 40 million Brazilian young kid. And Rafa was like, well, shrug, had a look at him, didn't think he was worth the money. So that's probably another reason why they've fallen out. Having said that, we did a story on Joe Linton in February issue of Match of the Day magazine, did a bit of research on him. I quite like the lad. He's very humble, down to earth. He's been out on loan in, I think, Switzerland, and he's a family man, and he looks the part. He's a proper target man. He's absolutely a striker.
I've been fairly impressed with him. Yeah. I've watched, obviously, Newcastle in pre-season and the first game. Again, it's only one game, but I thought he's a completely different player to Rondon.
He looks like he's got a bit more pace.
Much more mobile. Yeah. I feel like he's a threat. He can be a bit of a menace. You know, Rondon, I know, was the big target man, was going to hold him up, but I think Joe Linton's just that little bit busier. He's just going to work that little bit more. Is that fair?
Well, I agree with you, but what Rondon had that Joe Linton doesn't have is the positional awareness. So I'm watching him on Sunday, and he wasn't for me taking up the right positions. He was getting caught a bit deep. He was getting caught surrounded by players. He needs to get in between the defenders. And there was a couple of times balls going at the box and he wasn't there. The one time he was there, he glanced a header wide and he did manage to get a pretty decent shot off, which went straight at Leno. The one thing I would wish would be for him to have Rafa in his ear rather than Steve Bruce, because I think Rafa could turn this lad
tactical
into
a
proper Premier League striker, because he's built for the Premier League, and you know, I'd love him to, you know, we love a number nine. I'd love him to get some goals, so fingers crossed.
But what happens if someone comes in and offers, so if, you know, he has a cracking season with us and maybe he's into next season, and then another team comes along and offers sort of 60 million from him?
Well, Sean, that's exactly what'll happen, because we're a stepping stone club, so we know the deal.
Mm-hmm. Is that? I was just going to ask, is that how you think Mike Ashley does his business? Yeah. You think we're buying potential here, not just productivity, 40 million, and if he has a cracking season, I know I can get 60, 70. Great, I've had one season where he's done wonders and I've just made a 30 million profit.
Yeah. Well, you can just look at over the past 12 years, or now after this summer signings, our net spend has jumped up to an average of just over 7 million per year. Do you know what I mean? For 12 seasons, that's just absolutely ridiculous. Even for a Championship side, let alone a Premiership side, with all of the money that's coming in. And prior to this summer, I think our net spend was only 4 million, wasn't it? Like, on average per season, which is just absolutely ridiculous, you know? But within that, like Perez, he bought for 1.4 million from Tenerife and sold him for 30 million. So for Mike Ashley, this is just a gold mine, you know? Mm. And at the end of the day, it's serving his purpose. It's minimum spend. It's maximum exposure for Sports Direct. He's got all of his holdings around there. It's all free advertising because the club is just receiving buttons, and that's only been recently. And it's a vehicle to advertise his sort of enterprises.
That's why there's unrest, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why that's what's wrong.
Losing, it's about
that's
priorities.
What the boycott is. That's what we spoke about earlier, where we said it's relative to your club.
Well, it's wrong because at the end of the day, a football club or any sports sort of association or anything, you know, they are there to compete. And that's all that we want to do, you know? There's nothing more. I think if you were to give any Geordie a choice between winning the league or winning the FA Cup, I think hands down, probably about, if it's not 90% or higher, we would all say an FA Cup win. You know?
Really? Yeah, that surprises me, honestly. Yeah,
to have, Magpies,
I
think.
I wouldn't say
90%.
Well, I don't know.
I hate this argument. It's such a non-argument. Yeah. But we do have it. But the thing is, we've got much more chance of winning a cup. We're not going to win the Premier League, and all Ashley wants to do is keep us in the Premier League.
I know, but we've had no chance of winning the cup with the teams that Ashley's been fielding, you know. So, like League Cup, FA Cup, you name it, you know, we're just non-existent. He's pulled the ropes back, or we've got such a shallow sort of depth in squad that the managers there aren't able to make a calculated risk on putting out the first team in case there's injuries, because they need the points just to maintain Premiership survival.
Well, legal title, legal cup, shall I say. We're really getting into it now. The studio is heating up. We heard from Harry DeCosmo there talking a little bit about the article. It's time for us to unpick it next.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by Jim Colberg from the London Magpies, Sean Wade from the Newcastle Supporters Trust, and Matt Ketchell from the BBC Match of the Day magazine. Of course, the big story of the day is Rafa Benitez's column in The Athletic. He wanted to address a few things. Obviously, there was a matchday programme on the weekend to Arsenal, and he felt like there was a few things he wanted to address. And already, Matt can't even believe it in the studio, a swift response from Newcastle managing director Lee Charnley there. But let's look at what Rafa had to say. I won't read it all because it is a three-page one, and this is radio. But just a couple of things. He starts off by saying, wherever you go with all my heart. Nice little touch between him and the fans. He said, I've always encourage supporters to get behind Steve Bruce and the team, but I've been made aware of some misinformation from Lee Charnley in the club's match programme last weekend, and I wanted to address that. I think it's important. When I joined Newcastle in 2016, I did it with my heart. I could feel the history and see the potential of the club. I wanted to be part of the project. I tried to do my best. I even stayed when we went down to the Championship. I said no to other offers, bigger than the offers of the ones I had recently. I'm not interested in moving for money, as Mr. Lee Charnley stated. So that's just the first part. Let's digest that. Are we on board with what Rafa's saying? Or we think he's been fair, open and honest in this article so far?
It's quite the backhand return, that, really. You know, it's a... You don't dice with Rafa on politics in terms of that. You know, I don't think...
He's so eloquent, is he? Knows how to put it.
He's sort of emotional intelligence is very very strong, and Lee Charnley's chomped there and taken the bait in a lot of ways there, and I think that's a bit of a misstep, really, because when they say it, a lot has been said about communication with Lee Charnley. He's trying to get across that the club are trying to communicate, but it's done in such a ham-fisted, clumsy way. And when it's communicated, it's this sort of stuff. And of course, it's given Rafa a lot of ammunition there.
Well, he went on, he did go on to say, Newcastle's board had a year to sort out my contract, but when we met at the end of last season, they didn't make me a proper offer. They told me they didn't want to invest in the academy or the training ground. In brackets, if they like, I can go on and explain the reason why Mike Ashley has refused to do that. Let's talk about that, because on last week's show, it really got me thinking. Matt, you painted such a beautiful picture. You said Chelsea's training ground is like the Swiss Alps. You said Man United's training ground is like an Audi car showroom. You said you get to Newcastle's, it's like a warehouse or a scene from The Hunger Games. There's nothing there, just a few wheelie bins, as Sean said. We need to upgrade it. They want more than this paddling pool. They want a swimming pool. And now the training ground has come up. So Rafa has been behind the scenes trying to get this to happen. Newcastle, why hasn't it happened?
I just think it's just getting a bit Jeremy Kyle, isn't it? But I'm kind of enjoying it, because we've had so much lack of communication, as Jim said. Now Charlie's all of a sudden found his mouthpiece. That what comment you just said there, Charlie, if they like, they being Charlie and Ashley, I can
I love
explain
that, by the
reason.
Way,
so he's just got stuff up his sleeve, and I can explain the reason why Mike Ashley refused to do that, upgrade the academy in the training ground. I've got a theory on this. Right, I've got a theory that Ashley would be interested in selling the academy and the training ground. It's a model that some clubs adopt. I think Brentford do it. I think Huddersfield do it. They don't have academies. You know, if there's any fans listening, correct me if I'm wrong. They don't have academies. What they do is they bring in first year pros at 16, and they take players who've been released from Arsenal's academy, Man United's academy, and they do things like that. And I think it's just another way, because Ashley does everything on the cheap.
It's a business.
It's another way of doing things on the cheap. He could sell the land, the training ground, that they call it the bottom end and the top end. The bottom end, I believe, is where the academy train. And if you get promoted to the first team, you go up to the top end where the first team train. That's the way the layout is in Little Benton. I just wonder if there could be a Tesco supermarket on the bottom end of the training ground this time next year. That's the way Ashley works.
Well, for me, there's nothing better than a good conspiracy theory that we've just heard there that could be true. But B, we've got this article from Rafa telling us, you know, painting a picture of what he thought, why he left, and the contract offer. But it's almost what he hasn't said is the juiciest bit, where I can divulge why, but I won't do. It's almost like a prod, a jab to Mike Ashley, isn't it?
He's not a kiss and tell sort of person, though, is he? At the end of the day, he's always maintained a very high level of professionalism. So I don't think he's really going to change on that unless he's provoked to do that, you know.
And at Even though he has put this action, because I do want to ask you that. I was speaking to Martin Allen, who's the Love Sport Drive presenter, earlier before we come on, and he said, I'm very surprised at this because Rafa, you know, touch of class, touch of professionalism, that he's even done this article. He felt for him it was too much. He should have left it to bed. He shouldn't have even said this at the most. So he hasn't even divulged the extra. Do you agree with what Martin Allen said there?
No, because he's been, he says in the same article, I haven't been able to talk to the press without their permission since I've been under contract. So as part of his employment
contract.
But
Martin was saying he should be saying nothing.
Nobody can finally speak now because he's not under contract for Newcastle. He's probably got loads more to say. He's keeping a lot up his sleeve. And again, if he is all about the money, as Lee Charnley says, then he's going to be paid, you know, handsomely by The Athletic to reveal his opinions, and all of a sudden we've got this tennis match going on.
Well, Martin almost said that he feels like he should have, A, said nothing at all, and he feels like this deal, that he said, you can't just strike up this deal. He said, this deal's been in the pipeline for months and months and months. Do you believe that as well?
I do. You didn't believe it, did you, Sean?
Well, the thing is that I think he has been approached by other clubs continuously. I mean, there was talk of sort of Paris Saint-Germain, Leicester, Celtic, I know, and this is just in the past couple of recent months to what we know about. So really speaking, he's a world-class manager. So yeah, he is going to be approached. I think for me, the respect that I had for Rafa just excelled when we were relegated and he stuck with us, you know. He bounced with straight back, got promoted into the Premier. He was then promised sort of within that they were going to invest in the squad. They said to him, with his worldly experience, what do you want to do, Rafa? He said, right, well, we need to address the training facilities, we need to address the academy, we need to really build this, you know. This has got such a big potential. We can take this places, we can take this team to Europe, you know, and they can be challenging the top six. He said, we'll get them in the top 10. He said, but we'll need to invest, you know. Yeah, Rafa, we'll do that. Whatever the conversation was, whether that's how it was, but they got him to sign the dotted line. And once that happened, then they started retracting on all of the promises that were made. So really speaking, everything that he said, within that, obviously, Jim's pointed out he is sort of possibly holding back on a few things. But, you know, it just comes back to what he's asked for. He said it publicly to us that he wanted improvements to the training facilities. It's been screaming out for, like, sort of maybe an update for the past sort of 15 years in any case.
Let's be frank. The opening shot from Lee Charnley in the match day programme was seen by all fans at the stadium at that point. And the message, the sledgehammer message that was trying to get across there is Rafa is greedy, Rafa went for the money.
Now, which is not
if
true.
That's not cause for right to reply, I don't know what it is. It's questioning his professional integrity.
It's completely untrue. What Charnley said is we strongly believe we went beyond what we could reasonably ask to keep Rafa. What they've offered him is the same wages with less control over signings. That's
which
worse
is what
terms.
Rafa also said in the Athletic.
They've offered him a worse deal.
Well, let's see what Lee Charnley had to say coming back, because obviously Benitez, obviously he wanted to redevelop the training ground, and he was basically told in no uncertain terms that this wasn't going to happen. Lee Charnley had this to say. He said, what we have said is that it's about priorities. There is a pot of money, but what is the greater need here? At this current time, it's the players on the field. This is not unreasonable. The pot of money can only go so far. You go and you spend it on the training ground, and if we do, there's less to spend on other areas. If we spend it on the academy, we can't spend it on the team. If we spend too much on wages, there's less to spend on the team. This doesn't mean we won't spend in those areas, because we will do, but our view at this current time is the priority is the players on the field. That was Lee's response. What did you make of that? And it was a swift one as well. You was quite surprised with that, Matt.
Yeah, I can't keep up. It's like we haven't heard from him for 12 years, and all of a sudden you can't keep him quiet. It's just a complete deflection tactic, and the two aren't mutually exclusive, in my opinion. You invest in the team, and you don't stop investing in the training ground. The training ground clearly needs investment. It hasn't been updated since the early 2000s. Leicester, they've got a £100 million training ground. Brighton have got a £120 million training ground. These are clubs. Imagine I said this to you 10 years ago. Those clubs are in League One. It's scandalous that we've been allowed ourselves to fall this far behind those clubs.
Well, you say that, but Lee's... Sorry, Sean, just so I'll ask this to you. Lee's message was that he doesn't agree. He said, our pitches are very good. Our gym is very good. It's all functional. Do we have a swimming pool or water facilities? No, but we would like them at some stage.
The fact is that they've had 12 years in any case under Mike Ashley's reign to do that. And within that time, he's had money coming in. Like, I mean, everybody that he's sold from Sissoko, etc., etc., it's been coming in, like sort of £5 million payments each year or something like that. These payments were never actually see back into the squad, so why is that money not being used in any case? You know, there's trickles of money off players left, right and centre coming in, so why are they not using some of that money to sort of develop the training? And it's not like they need to go out and buy some land for, like, say, £100 million or something, do you know what I mean, and relocate the training. They've got acres and acres of land there. It's got, like, a small gym. It's got an indoor pitch, and the indoor pitch that they've got...
A paddling pool.
Well, they've got a paddling pool and some wheelie bins for dunk baths, yeah. So we can't forget that. I mean, you know, that they did go to Argos or something for that, so, you know, it was £20.99. So I've seen them in the catalogue. But other than that, I mean, the indoor pitch, when it was built 20 years ago, it was only meant to be a temporary structure. The players back then weren't happy with that indoor pitch. The roof line was too low, etc., etc., for a full-size pitch. The players have never, ever liked that when it was even built, but it was always done as a temporary
measure.
They
relayed it under Rafa. And when you go to Newcastle to go to a press conference by Steve Bruce, the press all walk across the indoor pitch. It's absolutely madness. People are traipsing across the indoor pitch. I know it's an indoor pitch, but you still shouldn't have people walking all over it every day. It's little things like that. That if a player's picking between Wolves, Leicester, Newcastle, he's going to have a word with players and say, what's a training ground like? What's the facilities like? And it could be, you know, a deal breaker and we could lose out on players. So they're not mutually exclusive. I'll say that again. I think they both should be invested in heavily.
Unfortunately, I wish we had more time because we could talk about this literally for an hour. There is so much to get through with it all. It's a shame we don't do longer time, but you have got Norwich this weekend and next we'll be getting your opposing view.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by Jim Colberg from the London Magpies, Sean Wade from the Newcastle Supporters Trust, and Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine. Look, we was getting into it there. I feel like we could talk Rafa, the article, all day long. There's so much to unpick from it, even the stuff we haven't heard yet. But let's talk a little bit about your game this weekend. You are playing Norwich, and it is away. You do have a couple of tough trips, Norwich, then Spurs away, but then you've got, you're not back at St James's Park till you play Watford. Let's talk a little bit about Norwich then. You mentioned earlier, I think, Sean, I'm sure it was you said it was a 6-pointer already.
No, I didn't say
was
that.
It was Matt, sorry, yeah. Excuse me. Matt, you said it was a 6-pointer.
It is, isn't it? Don't you think?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so at all. No.
We can't lose this game.
The fact of the matter is that Norwich come off the back of a bit of a hammering at Anfield. They got beat 4-1, but they did manage to score a goal at Anfield. It's their first home game in the Premier. They're going to have a big crowd against them, and we aren't going to have a massive fan base down there because our club returned 700
I thought you'd already sold 2,000. They returned 700 after the 2,000.
They returned 700 tickets back down to Norwich. So basically, I think because the normal allocation down there is about 2,800 to 3,000.
So 2,000.
So
right.
we've got only 2,000. That's travelling.
So that's Newcastle assuming that we're not going to sell them. And then they don't want to take the hit on them, so they send them back to the club.
But did the club also get wind of a lot of season tickets that were cancelled? So, like, there was 11,000 fans that cancelled the season tickets, and they were saying, no, we're boycotting, and basically boycotting Mike Ashley and stuff. But, however, he doesn't receive any money from away ticket sales other than the £1 admin fee. So a lot of our fans were actually choosing just to go to away games this season.
Yeah. Well, me and Jim were speaking about, because Jim's a London-based mag, and we were talking about the way our away tickets work is you need loyalty points, and the club put the tickets on sale, and you need to have a certain amount of loyalty points to apply for games. So, for example, we played Spurs in February this year. It was at Wembley, and I think that went on at around about 80-90 points, which is quite high. And then it trickles down as they get nearer to the game, and it'll drop, and then if it comes off, it goes on member sale and then public sale. Very often the away tickets won't even go on member sale or certainly not public sale. Tottenham in a couple of weekends' time, is on about 10 points already. And I think that's a big indictment of the appetite for Newcastle fans is dwindling to go to away games. So Jim's in two minds whether or not to go. You probably can go, Jim. It's only on 10 points.
Well, this is the thing. I think a lot of people, and the same with the boycott, people were thinking about, do I go with my families and things like that. I'm a second-generation Geordie. My dad was born and bred in South Shields, grew up supporting Newcastle all his life. I could have been a Leicester fan.
Good choice there. Well
so
done.
Cheers, Dad.
Yeah.
Child line on the case there. But I'm a boycotter. I've not gone in ages to a home game, but I've got my family coming down potentially to go to the Spurs game. You know, I'd like a day out. I'd like to go and spend time. I'm in two minds about that sort of thing, and to hear that the points have gone down. You know, people are obviously having the same sort of dilemma and similar situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, coming back to Norwich and the six-pointer, Steve Bruce has got to win this game.
That's the Newcastle will have to win this game.
Well, one follows thing. The other, I yeah. would have thought.
No, no, well, but, I don't know, because Steve Bruce, we don't know how much time he's got at Newcastle, you know. There is a small difference. And I'm coming back to the question. You said a six-pointer. Sean disagrees, I disagree. I just wondered, in terms of Newcastle season, Steve Bruce irrelevant, is it a six-pointer game?
I don't think you can separate that. No, it's not yet. But because there's so many variables at play, how the transfers are going to pan out, what the system's going to look like, how those particular teams are going to do, it's very as ever with the start of a season with Newcastle United, it's all up in the air, and who knows until I think we've got to there's been a lot of hysteria. We've got to think about the Norwich result and be quite pragmatic about it. But I'm firmly of the belief, you know, for Steve Bruce, this has massive significance and massive poignance in terms of how he's going to be perceived going forward. And then maybe it becomes a six-point.
Think if we lose to Norwich and it's a bit of a, you know, a damp performance, the negativity will be, you know, furious. And I just think if he doesn't get anything from this game, Norwich, we've got to be taking points off Norwich if we want to stay in the league.
It's a tough run.
If he doesn't get points, and then you've got Spurs next, then you've got the League Cup. I think he's already under pressure, and I think that's why the Arsenal game, we really missed a trick there by nicking a point, which was there.
But did impressions change after that Arsenal game? Because speaking to you, Fringe, speaking to other Newcastle fans, I know they were, I don't want to say overjoyed with the performance, but they were not disheartened with it. They thought it was decent. It wasn't maybe something that was disastrous. Is that fair to say, Sean? You're all looking at me like, no, so I've wasted time asking this question.
Well, for me, I was boycotting as well, and I have been boycotting St James's for a long time now. I was going to the away matches, so lucky that using a relative at St James's, his season ticket for away ticket allocation and stuff. And also when they go on general sale. But basically, my boycott's now extended to all matches. I don't believe in giving Mike Ashley any support whatsoever. So me being on the terraces, singing and cheering on and things like that, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be a set A supporter in a sense. So I was watching the game on Sunday from sort of my iPad basically, and with that I could have finished my beer and went to sleep. There was just nothing in it. The second half was just dismal for me. It was a really poor game. The atmosphere in the ground was diabolical. I don't know why they didn't all just boycott, to be fair, because really speaking, for what, you know, they were saying, oh, you've got to be there to support the team and it's about them lads with like black and white shirts on and I've never missed a game in 50 years. You just think, get on
that
with you.
Nothing like that.
You know, at the end of the day, it's just like, come on, man, give us a break. At the end of the day, if you go to the match, then go to the match, but get behind them then. But they all just sat there like it was a mug. And you think, like, for Christ's sake, you know, at the end of the day, you've paid your money for your season ticket, granted. You know, and you want to go along and support them, so support them. But sit there and sit on your hands and give a little bit of boo at the end, do you know what I mean? Because we're going to beat 1-0. It's like, you know, that's not a supporter at the end of the day.
Yeah,
you know?
I do agree there. Well, six-pointer or not, it's time for you three to give a prediction. Sean, I'll start with you. Scoreline, what are you thinking this weekend?
Do you know what? I don't want to say it, but I'm tempted to say that. And I can see Norwich sort of maybe he's getting... I don't know, it could be a 3-2 or it could be like a 2-1, you know, but I'm going to give it to Norwich. I think that they're going to have that little bit of advantage on home ground, the first Premier League game. They've got fan ownership there, you know, they've got the belief in the squad, and I think it's, you know, off the back of a pretty strong defeat at Liverpool, but the fact that they managed to score at Anfield as well just edges it for me, because I can't see Newcastle scoring at Anfield.
They played well, I think, despite the score.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was a good... Mm-hmm. performance.
They've got a good belief there as well, you know. So they've got something that we want, you know. They've
Sean's
got fan ownership.
You're going for a Norwich win, Jim. What are you saying?
I spoke to some of your colleagues on Monday, and I kind of laboured upon a draw. I can't see us not conceding goals at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I saw enough signs there to see the sort of regimen lapse that was there before. Hopefully, you'll get a bit of a hangover from the organisation that Rafa had. But I can't see us keeping a lot of clean sheets this season. That said, Norwich are a promoted side. They've not spent big.
The return of Tim Krul.
Yeah, the return of Tim Krul.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was a good keeper in his time for us. But, yeah, it's... I'm going to be very boring and say one apiece.
Oh, it's Norwich win and a draw, Matt.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll say Newcastle win, but only if he plays 5-2-3 with Joe Linton and St Maximum and Almir on either side. Let's go for it. Three up front and have a go at them and you know, score more than they do.
Don't get us wrong, I want to see we'll win.
I'm
not going to be there or anything, but I'll be watching it. So, yeah. Like, on my iPad, but at the end of the day, I don't want to see we'll get beat. I think it's going to be a tough game.
Well, I'm
going to... It's more so going off the game on Sunday.
That's fair enough, but yeah. We've had one apiece for each, win, lose and draw. I'm going to break it and go with Matt. I do genuinely think Newcastle will beat Norwich this weekend because I do think Norwich will be in a world of trouble this year. That is the end of the hour on the Newcastle Fan Show. We'll see you all next week.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.